Hello, and welcome to Anime Audio Commentary. Today I'll be commenting on episode 49 of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. If you'd like to watch along, then start watching now. So last we left off, things had gotten pretty tenuous. On the one hand, Pride and Gluttony were on pretty shaky legs, and Lanfan had arrived to help out everyone. But at the same time, Pride decided to ingest Gluttony in a rather horrifying display, so, you know, kind of a toss-up. We also have this subplot where Mustang has sort of kidnapped the Fuhrer's wife, and he says it's for her safety, but, you know, it's not exactly clear what's going on. I don't think he's going to do anything untoward, but at the same time, you know, hostages are valuable. So Pride, it seems, even though he's been sort of reinvigorated by devouring Gluttony, he seems to be sort of resorting to mind games here in addition to, well, just attacking as usual. I find it interesting that he would sort of pursue this line of questioning where he asks Ed if Hohenheim is willing to sort of help him. I mean, the answer is, we can be reasonably sure, is of course. So speaking of tension, Greed and Lanfan are naturally going to be at odds. Because, you know, on the one hand, Greed, like, he's definitely an asset, but given that he is inhabiting Ling's body, Lanfan can't be too happy about that state of affairs. Oh dear. Yeah, so Ed is astutely aware that her arm is not quite healed yet and that it's starting to hamper her. I'd imagine things aren't going to be especially good if she insists on continuing to fight, even when her prosthetic arm is on the verge of being ripped out of its socket. Yeah, I mean, that's not good. Like, if you have little more than sutures holding your arm on, probably not a good idea to move your arm or stretch it or really do anything strenuous. So it seems like things aren't all bad, you know. Hohenheim managed to drag Alphonse back to life. So on the one hand, Alphonse is willing to share all sorts of interesting information, But on the other hand, he's kind of late to the game here. It's interesting. Wow. That was pretty heavy. So Hohenheim's dropping the knowledge that the homunculi, having been created from Father, and Father having been created from Hohenheim, that sort of makes them blood relatives to the Elric brothers. And as a result, they can probably leverage that blood relation for nefarious ends. You know, that's an interesting angle I don't think we've really heard of before, that perhaps part of the reason why the Elric brothers are so important is because they are blood relatives, albeit separated by a couple generations. Well, technically, they would be like, what, first cousins, give or take? Yeah, you know, I don't recall this line of questioning ever being examined before, and to be fair, I don't think anybody really talks about it later, but that is interesting. I seem to recall that there's a fair bit of stuff like that in the 2003 adaptation after it had already gone anime original. Not that that particular part of it was bad, at least the familial aspect. Might have to rewatch the 2003 adaptation at some point, just because of how sheerly different it was. You know, if for no other reason than it was like, I don't know, I don't want to call it a product of its time, because that kind of carries a negative connotation to it, but I don't know, it kind of was a product of its time, because normally these days, stuff doesn't get adapted in quick enough succession where you either have to go anime original or make filler or do something. You normally just produce like 13 to 26 episodes and then go on a break. I don't know, I think there's merits to both approaches, but I don't know. I think this might be, like, part of my temperament where whatever I don't have, I want. You know, when it's hot out, I wish there was cold weather. When it's cold out, I wish there was hot weather. Now, Hohenheim's taking an interesting approach here. Because on the one hand, he's sort of playing up this heroic persona. You know, the hero always shows up right at the last minute. And he's walking over to Pride with such confidence that Pride can only naturally assume that he is severely outclassed. That could certainly be the case, but, you know, we don't know for certain. You know, it really seems like this is probably not the entirety of the plan here. Alphonse just sort of bum-rushing Pride. Hohenheim seems to be confident that something good is gonna happen here. You know, I feel like Pride is being rather arrogant here, considering what Hohenheim is capable of. Of course, I suppose arrogance comes with the territory. Yeah, this is a rather incredible feat of alchemy right here, sort of creating this vast dome of earth to entomb Pride. And it seems as though it's, I don't know what you'd call it. Opaque, I guess? Like, surely it's airtight and watertight, but it's also sealed in such a way that light cannot penetrate through. Hence, Pride is effectively powerless in there. So yeah, he's kind of stuck in there with Alphonse, but at the same time, Pride can't really do anything. He's effectively just a kid. I do find it interesting that Alphonse decided to effectively take one for the team here. I guess it makes sense that, given he doesn't need air, food, or water, he's the obvious choice to sort of stick behind here. Ooh, shoes on the other foot here. Alphonse is taking the opportunity to sort of needle Pride a little bit. Like, hey, I'm ready to stay in here for however long it takes to wait out the promised day. So if I take you off the table, that's better for us. So despite everything, there's still a bit of friction between Ed and Hohenheim. Perhaps understandably so. I mean, Alphonse sort of devised this whole little plan and then neglected to tell Ed, naturally, because he would oppose it. I think Ed's being a little unfair in that he's blaming Hohenheim, but I mean, from his perspective, it would seem like it was Hohenheim's idea to do all this. Yeah, Alphonse makes a good point. They've kind of been separated for a little while, so meeting under these circumstances is certainly less than ideal, but I guess the idea is, if this is what nets them the victory overall, then, you know, it's probably worth it. So it seems to me that Greed is doing some real big thinking here. You know, most of the homunculi are out of the picture. Only Sloth and Father are really still around and doing things, so Greed seems to think he could probably swoop in there and take over. Seems to me that he's, looking at things a little too simplistically, but I can definitely understand the allure of hijacking everything at the last moment. So it seems like Scar and company are en route to where the Elric brothers and company are. I can only assume that they might want to take out Pride too. I don't know, it's been a little while. I don't remember exactly the reasoning behind what precisely they're doing. I guess the upshot of this interaction is that they have been informed that Mei Ling has taken a quick U-turn here. You know, she's not going to Xing after all, and she's carrying Envy with her. The problem is that, you know, this is more or less exactly what Envy wants. I mean, technically speaking, he's out of the game for right now, but as soon as he gets his hands on, I don't know, like a willing human body, or even an unwilling one, judging on that encounter with Yoki, you know, like, once he can manage something, I'd imagine Envy will start doing things again, and those things will certainly be good for no one. I'd imagine he's got a real axe to grind, too. So, Salim is not content to resign himself to his situation. You know, he's trying to tunnel out. It's interesting that he's not really speaking at all, you know. He doesn't deign to talk to Alphonse. At least not initially. You know, this is interesting here. Alphonse and Pride are sort of poking holes in each other, verbally. Because on the one hand, Alphonse is saying the entirety of the plan would have collapsed had he and Edward just left the country and gone into hiding. But at the same time, you know, I think Father kind of has this understanding that they are too selfless to act in such a way. Therefore, even if they're going to resist the overall plan, they're not willing to just destroy the plan by saving themselves, if that makes any sense. Because, yeah, if they leave, that puts the plan on hold, but it doesn't ultimately put an end to it for good. I guess what else is really interesting about this conversation is how Pride talks about Mrs. Bradley. You know, she does seem to be a real good-hearted woman, very selfless and motherly and all that. And it's kind of rubbing off on Pride as much as it possibly can, with him being an inhuman monster. But I don't think any of her virtues is going to stave off the inevitable. So we finally cut back to Mustang. At this point, he's already taken Mrs. Bradley hostage. And now it's time to kick things into high gear. You know, as far as any of them know, Wrath is dead. He died in that train accident. You know, accident in massive quotes, but at the same time, we haven't seen a body. Oh dear. So it would seem as though Scar and company have come across this giant earthen tomb. Man, it's unfortunate that these Chimera are so untrusting of each other, considering they are all on the same side. I feel like if anything would convince them to stop arguing, it'd be the presence of Ed. But they don't seem to be willing to listen. You know, it is kind of serendipitous that all four of these Chimeras sort of resigned all around the same time. I mean, I guess it goes to show you that having a bad boss like Kimblee is really detrimental to morale if they were all willing to desert when, you know, that sort of puts a bounty on their head. Alright, so Fu is heading out to check out Central ahead of everybody else. I think it goes without saying that he's probably gonna learn something big, like conflict has begun, Mustang's troops are moving into the city to take care of things. Yeah, things are getting tense, you know. The Elric brothers and company have formulated a strategy for dealing with Father and the Promised Day. You can only imagine things are going to pop off in pretty short order. So, unfortunately, on the promised day, it would seem as though there's a solar eclipse. You know, that never really bodes well, solar eclipses, because I feel like whenever there's some sort of ritual that involves an astrological event, it's always going to be like a solar eclipse or something like that. Of course, these kids, in sort of looking out for the eclipse, they've also spotted the first signs of active conflict in the city. So it seems like things are getting really tense really quickly. You know, Mustang's not playing around. Yeah, so things are not good. Mustang is sort of relying on Mrs. Bradley as a hostage. But there are some who definitely don't have compunctions about killing her along with the rest. I'd imagine that would look really bad if word were to get out about that. Yeah, you know, Hawkeye's not playing here. She just has a gun right to Mrs. Bradley's head. You know, I thought the idea was they were sort of pretending that this was for her own protection. But, you know, it's pretty clear that that's not the case anymore. Alright, well that's it for this episode. If you've enjoyed it, then by all means, tune in for the next one. See you, Space Cowboy.